Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this day after the presidential election. Donald Trump's Twitter bio now reads President-elect of the United States. And tomorrow, the President-elect of the United States will be going to the White House to meet with the President, who gave an address today in front of the White House talking about the importance of a peaceful transition of power, and he will be doing all in his power to make sure that that happens. The two will be having a meeting. It's an unlikely meeting. It was an unlikely election result, and we're going to talk about all of this hour. As the president said, a lot of Americans are exalted today. A lot of Americans are dismayed, but it may take some time for the president, for the country, to sort of heal from all of this, and it will probably result in a pretty significant reshaping of the political landscape. How did Donald Trump win this election? What happened in the state of Wisconsin? We're going to have people with us for a full 2 hours of our program today, and we'll be welcoming your phone calls as well so you can help us make sense of all that went on. First hour of the show, Craig Gilbert will join us, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Bureau Chief in Washington. He writes the Wisconsin Voter blog. Mark Niket is a state and local government reporter for Bloomberg News, who's been covering the campaign. We'll speak with Ed Pozzoli, who is president of Affordable-based law firm. He was co-chair of the Jeb Bush for governor in Broward County. He was a Donald Trump supporter after that. And Francesca Chambers will join us, White House correspondent for the Daily Mail. We'll have many other guests with us, hour two of the show. Your phone calls welcome. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we are on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. Hi, Craig. Thanks very much for being with us.
How you doing?
Well, just like you, a little weary.
Everybody's, very weary.
I'll bet you're very, very weary, and it's been such a heck of a long campaign. But what in the world went on last night? It was just amazing to me because everybody had this wrong. Polls, the Marquette poll, which is so reliable and has been for so long, off. Everybody off, all over the place. Everybody shocked. So what
happened? Yeah,
what
happened? Not only the public polling, but also if you talk to strategists in the parties privately, they were all completely taken aback. I mean, Republican insiders did not expect Wisconsin to go to Donald Trump. No matter what they may tell you today, that was not the expectation. Some of them thought that Ron Johnson had a chance to beat Russ Feingold, but they weren't, supremely confident about that either. So it was a shock to everybody. The one thing that is hardest to capture in a poll is the composition of the actual electorate. And so when you get turnout trends that maybe you're not expecting, you're going to see some surprises. So I think it's a combination of the people that actually turned out to vote, and in some cases how they voted too. I mean, there were some pretty striking trends and patterns on the map and in the exit polls, and we can talk about those.
Yeah, let's talk about those. Some nationally, and I think that your figures show a difference in Wisconsin. You would have thought that college-educated white women were the natural constituency for Hillary Clinton, and she had those, according to other polls, in huge numbers, and yet nationally, she only won that group by 6%. I think you cite in today's paper it was 21% in the state of Wisconsin.
It was 21 in Wisconsin. Yeah, I mean, those numbers are going to really vary a lot from state to state. I mean, in redder states, it's going to be a more Republican number, and in bluer states, it's going to be a more Democratic number. The gap is pretty consistent. I mean, I think in most places, you did see a big gap, for example, between white college women and white non-college men. So the combination of gender and education gap, which was massive in Wisconsin, because this last group, blue-collar white men, 44-point margin for Donald Trump. So 44 points in one direction for men who didn't go to college, talking about whites, and 21 points in the other direction for white women who have a college degree. That's a pretty massive divide, and that was a big part of the 2016 story.
We were watching TV last night, a lot of different channels, but CNN was looking at Wisconsin because Wisconsin became very important along with Michigan and Pennsylvania and other places. But they kept saying, well, we're waiting for the vote to come in from Milwaukee County. Our Clinton sources tell us there's a huge chunk of votes that have yet to come in. And then it turned out that it wasn't all that many votes that they were waiting to have come in. So the Democratic vote was down Milwaukee County, Dane County as well?
Well, Dane County actually performed all right for Democrats. Milwaukee County, a different story. Milwaukee County and Milwaukee City were a problem for Democrats. There was a bigger drop-off in turnout than there was statewide, and that is an issue. I don't think that single-handedly cost Hillary Clinton the race, but it certainly didn't help. Dane County did not... the drop-off in turnout in Dane County was really about on par with the state as a whole. And so I think it, all things considered, performed decently for Hillary Clinton. But Milwaukee was a different story. And then beyond that, you know, she really did not do well in big swaths of the state. I mean, she only won 13 out of 72 counties. She didn't do well in the Fox Valley. And we talked about the rural vote where she just got hammered.
Right. You today say that the Trump victory map in Wisconsin is basically the victory map for Scott Walker in 2010.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting because the turnout, it was a presidential turnout, but it was a low presidential turnout. It was lower than the last four presidential races we've had, just below 2000, a few points more below, several points below 04 and 12 and 6 and 08. It was above the normal level for a midterm turnout, but the map was kind of like a midterm race. I mean, in Scott Walker's victories, you know, you see him winning 57, 58, 59 counties. And if you look at the 2010 map, Trump and Walker both won 59 counties, and it's almost the same counties. I mean, 57 of the 59 counties are the same counties. And some of those counties that Trump won are rural Democratic-leaning counties that haven't voted Republican for president in the last seven elections.
Oh, interesting.
Or the last 10 elections. I mean, there are parts of Wisconsin where Democrats are very competitive with worldwide voters, and they were not immune to the Trump wave yesterday.
Mm. So that whole thing that we were talking about for most of this election and trying to explain the rise of Donald Trump and the rise of Bernie Sanders, there are indeed a whole lot of people in this state and all over the country who are just having a hard time making ends meet. Their incomes aren't going up at all. They're hurting.
Yeah, and I think the debate that people are going to engage in, you know, in terms of the analysis, is how much of that is economic and, you know, people hurting and being open to that kind of populist message by Trump, how much, and also being pessimistic. I mean, the Trump voters were so much more pessimistic about the future than the Clinton voters. And then how much of it is more cultural, whether there's more resistance to a female candidate or they just didn't relate to Hillary Clinton. There are probably some, and education, which is, you know, you're going to have lower rates of college education in rural areas, and that plays into the demographic pattern in this race, too. So there's probably more than one thing going on, but all those things sort of came together, I think, to boost Trump's performance. And again, you know, the urban-rural gap is getting bigger and bigger. It has some kind of, somewhat disturbing implications for our politics in the sense that if we're sorting ourselves into parties of along the lines of class and education, that's concerning. I mean, Trump did get a lot of college-educated voters as well, but that non-college white demographic was like two-thirds of his vote. It was about one-third of Hillary Clinton's vote in Wisconsin.
Tell me about what you know about how much support he had for a ground game from Republicans, because there were so many Republicans who didn't endorse him, who were waiting to the last minute to say whether they voted for him. My idea of this was that she had the much better ground game put in place by President Obama some years ago, millions of people going door to door. He just didn't have very much. He was doing it on his own. And yet when you looked at the map early on last night, where he was going, it was as though somebody had a really exquisitely planned ground game for him that he just took care of brilliantly. Was it just by chance, or was there somebody behind the scenes who really knew what was going on here?
Well, I mean, sometimes we overrate and overstate the impact of the mechanics on the ground. I mean, you know, ground game can't make up for an enthusiasm gap, for example. And I also think it was always going to be the case in Wisconsin that, to whatever degree nationally, the Clinton campaign had a kind of a data advantage over the Trump campaign, you were less likely to see that in Wisconsin because the Republican Party has been very effective in Wisconsin, obviously through the Walker years, and Wisconsin is so experienced now at being a fierce presidential battleground that there's a lot more parity, and the Republican operation is a lot more practiced than it is in some other states. So I think that was one element in Wisconsin. You know, when you have a race that's decided by 1 point, those things can and do matter.
Mm-hmm. It is. I'm wondering what you think about the change in the political landscape. We have Republican control, as we do in the state of Wisconsin, nationally, completely. Will his agenda, do you think, be one that he'll act on immediately? This wall is something that he started with, you know, a year and a half ago. The appeal of Obamacare on day one, a Supreme Court vacancy that he's going to fill pretty immediately. Do you think that we'll see action on all of those issues he talked about for so long right away? Does he have to act on those?
Well, he's got the opportunity to act on them because of unified control. That's the really, you know, that's the salient fact here. And, you know, the lessons of history are that you want to take advantage of that when you can. I mean, that you don't have an endless window. You know, the first midterm election of his presidency is going to be 2 years away.
So I would
expect him to, yes, to act quickly. Then it'll be interesting to see how the Republicans in Congress, you know, act, and whether there are tensions or frictions between his agenda and their agenda. I'm not necessarily saying there will be, but it'll be a test of the Republican Party's cohesion to be on the same page as Donald Trump and start moving his agenda, whatever it is, through Congress.
Yeah. The other thing, just the visuals on all of this and the significance of all of this, it's hard to take it in. The president spoke very graciously today. He called Donald Trump in the middle of the night and wished him well, and he talked about how important it was to have a peaceful transition of power. You're going to have this meeting tomorrow. Donald Trump, the 45th president, the president-elect, meeting in the White House with the nation's first black president as he hands over the reins to a man who questioned his citizenship. I mean, the whole thing, it just goes, whoo, really?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And, you know, we've had these sort of crazy moments before in our history where, you know, strange bedfellows and the transitions of power and you know, enemies having to meet each other across the table. So I think, you know, people get that and they can deal with that. But it is another kind of surreal aspect to what's been a pretty surreal campaign.
Absolutely. It's been surreal. Let's take a few phone calls for you. 800-486-8655 is our number. And we start with Bill in Tomahawk. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, and hello to your guest as well. Beautiful day up here in Tomahawk, I've got to say. Sun's out, and we're making the best of it. What I wanted to say is that it's pretty obvious to me and people that I'm talking to that the polls have been wrong for longer than just this election. They've been wrong for years. And I think this isn't a short-term thing. The popularity of Obama has just been overestimated, and I say that as a Democrat and as a Bernie supporter, but This is a problem that isn't new. It's actually a lot older than anybody wants to admit. And I'll shut up and listen.
All right, thanks. What face do you have in polls?
There are issues, and you know, every time the polls get something wrong like this, you know, pollsters, people in the industry get together and try to figure out what went wrong, because they're actually getting paid to get it right. But you know, sometimes everybody is wrong. And that tends to tell you it's not because, you know, of the way that one pollster is doing his poll as opposed to the way another pollster is doing his poll, because there's a lot of different, I mean, there's been an explosion of, like, polling methods and approaches in this election. I mean, there are people doing online polls, panels, you know, robo-polls, traditional telephone surveys. There's more different kinds of polling going on than ever before. And yet, you know, most of it didn't capture the results. And sometimes it's because everybody's making the wrong assumptions about the composition of the electorate. And those assumptions are usually based on history. And so you can get an election that turns out to be a twist or a wrinkle or a shift, and you're not going to necessarily pick it up in the polling.
Yeah. The other twist in all of this is you have a president who's leaving with much higher favorability ratings, comparable to Ronald Reagan's leaving of office, than either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump has.
Yeah, that's stunning. The most stunning thing to me, and kind of to wrap your mind around, is, I mean, if you think about it, Donald Trump, his unfavorability rating in the Wisconsin exit poll is 63%. So 63% of the people in the exit poll said they had an unfavorable opinion of Donald Trump. Yet 21% of those people who have an unfavorable view of Donald Trump voted for Donald Trump. And yet, in the same exit poll, Barack Obama had an approval rating, I think, of 52%, but 11% of those people that approved of Barack Obama also voted for Donald Trump. So, the part that I think one reason why people were surprised is because, you know, Donald Trump's image didn't improve really during this campaign. I mean, he didn't become more popular. People just decided to set aside their qualms and reservations, either because of their appetite for change or because they also had similar qualms or greater qualms about Hillary Clinton. So that's one reason why this was such a astonishing kind of the way it unfolded in such astonishing way, was because, you know, the polling, I don't think the polling missed this. It was very consistent. I mean, he is the most unpopular nominee in polling history, and people do have major qualms and reservations about him, but enough people either set them aside or, like I said, had equal reservations. The people in the exit poll who thought that both candidates, that neither candidate was qualified or that neither candidate had the right temperament to be president, they voted over Donald Trump.
Right. Let's go to Rich in Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Mr. Gilbert and Kathleen. People wanted change, and they've gotten change, and now it's the morning after, and we've opened the box, and we're looking into the box. And like kids around the tree at the holidays, we're wondering what it is that we found in the box, because the Republicans have been very good at promising that they're the opposition party. They've said they want to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, which they refer to as Obamacare. They want to build a wall between, or at least Donald Trump does, between Mexico and the United States, one of the longer borders between nations in the world. And they're going to have to deliver now. There's no one standing.
And we have you on now.
Okay, so hang on.
I'm on a cell phone. Would it be better on a...
Yeah, we're getting something else there. Craig, thanks, Rich, for the call. Craig?
Yeah, well, so Republicans have been kind of pilloried by their base up until now for not being able to deliver, and they couldn't deliver because they didn't have power, except in the House and in Congress. But now the caller's right. Now they're going to have to, they have no excuse. They're going to have to deliver. They're going to have to, you know, find some agreement and common ground, and there's not... It's not going to happen on every issue. There are real differences in the Republican Party. There may be things that Republican voters are hungry for and thirsting for that still can't be delivered. There may be differences. I mean, one of the phenomena of the Donald Trump campaign was that he wasn't he didn't kind of check all the boxes in terms of the Republican orthodoxy on taxes and entitlements and trade and immigration. So there are real differences there that divide Republicans in Congress, and that will be a huge test.
Yeah. Craig in La Crosse, final caller for you, Craig. Hi, Craig. You're on the air with Craig.
Hi. My question is in regards to the Supreme Court. What options do the Democrats have in stopping extreme judges?
Well, they can try to filibuster. But then the majority has the option of basically, you know, altering the rules. So it can't be filibustered. I mean, this is an ongoing debate that happened. It's happened when the Democrats were in control, and it'll happen now if the Republicans are in control. The Supreme Court is such a big deal to everybody that sometimes these traditions and these rules get set aside, and we will see a collision over this, especially since there's a lot of bad blood and ill will on the part of Democrats over the fact that Republicans refused to act on the open seat in the final year of the Obama presidency. So that's going to be a bitter fight.
Craig, thank you very much. What are you looking at today? Well, after your nap,
everything we've been talking about. I mean, the numbers, the math, the exits, the, you know, sort of what happened on the Democratic side in terms of the fall off, and what happened on the Republican side in terms of how Trump overperformed Romney in some really important ways.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us. Thanks for all your great reporting.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Craig Gilbert, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington bureau chief. He writes the Wisconsin Voter blog about politics and elections, and has, of course, a front page story today about what happened in the state of Wisconsin yesterday. And also, Ron Johnson won yesterday. We didn't get into that race because we were concentrating on presidential, but of course that happened too, which was, it was a tight race, but it was expected for many, many polls before what happened yesterday that Russ Feingold would win that race. We have other guests coming up. We're going to be talking about, we're going to be speaking with the president of a Florida-based law firm in Broward County, and he is a Donald Trump supporter. He was co-chair of the Jeb Bush for governor, and we will also be speaking with the White House correspondent for the Daily Mail during the course of this hour, and welcoming more of your phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. We'll take more calls. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter @KDunnShow. Unexpected results last night from the presidential election. What do you make of it? How did it happen? We'd like to hear your thoughts as well. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We continue now, and we'll have two guests with us. Mark Niket is a state and local government reporter for Bloomberg News, who's been closely covering the campaign. Ed Pozzoli is president of the Florida-based law firm Tripp Scott. He was co-chair of Jeb Bush for governor in Broward County and served as an important member of the Bush-Cheney legal team in the 2000 presidential recount litigation. He's an active member of the Republican Party and served as chair of the Republican Party in Broward County, Florida, has been a Trump supporter. They will both join us after we hear from President-elect Donald Trump, who made these comments last night.
This political stuff is nasty and it's tough. It's been what they call a historic event. But to be really historic, we have to do a great job. And I promise you that I will not let you down. We will do a great job. We will do a great job. I look very much forward to being your president. And hopefully at the end of 2 years or 3 years or 4 years or maybe even 8 years, you will say, so many of you worked so hard for us, but you will say that that was something that you were very proud to do. And I can thank you very much. And I can only say that while the campaign is over, our work on this movement is now really just beginning.
And let's talk to Ed and Mark. Ed, hello. Thanks for being with us again. Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. And Mark, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So let's go to you, Ed, first. Congratulations. Your candidate won. What kind of president do you think he's going to be?
Well, I think we're off to a good start. I mean, that speech, that the part of that speech you just heard, as well as Paul Ryan's speech today and Secretary Clinton's speech, which I thought was tremendously gracious, and as well as President Obama's speech, turns the page, I believe, from a really tough campaign to now getting on with the beginning of the governing piece of this and the reconciliation. I thought that it made me really proud with respect to our system, the peaceful transition of power. And I do believe that, the four players, the key players, were speaking to all Americans, not just Republicans and Democrats, but all Americans. It was it's a good way to turn the page from a tough election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a tough election. Mark, in terms of the issues that were front and center in President-elect Donald Trump's campaign, immigration was certainly one, repeal of Obamacare on day two, an investigation of Hillary Clinton, which he talked about in her email situation quite a bit. Are all of those going to be on his agenda right away, do you think? Do they have to be for people to be happy with his early presidency?
Well, I think he has to at least address them early on in some sort of formal capacity, just to acknowledge that, you know, he is following through on what he talked about in the campaign. I think particularly when it comes to trade, he's talked about, you know, getting out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership on day one and more or less renegotiating the North American Free Trade Agreement. You know, doing something on immigration, obviously building a wall was a big element of his you know, campaign, particularly winning the primaries. A little unclear, you know, how much you can get done there, but I think he has to make a nod to try and do it. I'm not sure he'll actually pursue sort of the promise he made during the debate to, you know, sic the a special prosecutor on Hillary Clinton. In fact, you know, we've heard from some of the folks who are advising or at least supporting him, saying that probably other better things to focus on in the first 100 days, including the economy, than to go after Hillary Clinton at this point.
Mm-hmm. Does he need to build a wall right away, Ed?
Well, I think that was hyperbole in a certain sense. I mean, I think that the maybe with doubling or increasing the Border Patrol would be wise, enforcing the currently on the books immigration laws. I think those are things that he can do right away, probably rescinding several of the executive orders that dealt with immigration. I think those are things he can impact immediately, and I think that would be consistent with what he promised during a campaign.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, Ed, and then go to you for a response to Mark. From what I've been gleaning, it was a big surprise to Clinton supporters that she lost last night. There were so many polls. There was such confidence in her ground game, so much confidence you could tell in her face and her supporters that they had this election won. And from what I've been hearing, Republican insiders found themselves a little surprised that Donald Trump won last night. They didn't think the ground game was anywhere near what Clinton had. It was a surprise to everybody. Was it a surprise to you, honestly, Ed, or not?
It was a surprise in this respect. I mean, look, Florida, I look at it very parochial from a Florida standpoint. Florida is the most purple of purple states. This was going to be a close race. Regardless of what the polls showed, it was a close race. Trump ended up winning by about a point in, you know, 1.2, 1.3 percentage points, which translates to about 130,000 votes. We had a huge turnout, both Republicans and Democrats. The gender gap wasn't as great. The vaulted Hispanic vote or Latino vote that was supposed to be a huge advantage for Hillary Clinton turned out to be a big, you know, an advantage, but Cuban Americans returned home to the Republican side, and some of remnants coming out of, I think, Obama, the frustration around Obama opening up Cuba in the way it was done, all those folks essentially returned home. So there was a distinction around that. But I will share with you, the biggest surprise is right in your own state and some of the areas up there. I mean,
yes.
Wisconsin wasn't necessarily a targeted state that was going to be close, but the organization, the ground game between Governor Scott Walker and Paul Ryan and Chairman Priebus, I think, delivered the vote in Wisconsin for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. It was a surprise, Mark. Must have been to you, too, Wisconsin's vote.
Yeah, it was. Actually, as you were watching the results come in, you knew this was going to come down to how Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin vote, or at least if Hillary Clinton was going to have any chance of still getting the 270 electoral votes, she was going to have to win all three. And obviously she didn't. What was interesting about, you know, the run to the race is that the Trump campaign was, you know, very clear about what it needed to do to win. And it was always a long shot from the standpoint of, you know, they had to win Florida, win North Carolina, win Ohio, win Iowa,
right.
Key battleground states, and then, you know, crack the, you know, what's been kind of dubbed the blue electoral wall that Democrats have had in the industrial Midwest, you know, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, those kind of states. And they were very clear they were going to have to do that. And few people sort of gave them the chance to do it all, that, okay, maybe they could pick off a Florida or it was looking like Ohio and Iowa were pretty favorable for Trump. But to get all those battleground states and, as it turned out, you know, flip Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, states that haven't voted Republican since the 80s, you know, was a surprise. And it was actually quite stunning to see it unfold during the election.
Yes, it was. Ed, why did that happen?
Well, I think that it goes back to the core and the underlying theme of Trump's campaign. Trump's campaign is built around anti-establishment message, a tremendous underlying frustration and anxiety about how Washington is treating and addressing people's needs, both the trade issue, his strong stance on trade, kind of America First trade piece, as well as providing economic opportunity and less regulation and bring jobs back and being a strong proponent for the American worker, I think played really well in the Rust Belt. I mean, let's be blunt about it. I wasn't so sure how it would play in Florida, but clearly in Central and North Florida, it played very similar to what it played in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And, you know, if you look at those areas, there's a tremendous amount of folks who obviously felt disenfranchised. We saw that in the primary, which gave rise of the Trump candidacy, but also gave rise of Bernie Sanders' candidacy when basically an obscure Vermont senator almost took out Hillary Clinton in a Democratic primary. And that's all from the same source of frustration that a good portion of Americans have.
Yeah. I don't know how Donald Trump does this. I think it's pretty obvious to most people, Mark, that this country is amazingly divided and that Donald Trump said some things during this campaign that shocked a lot of people, many people thought were rather crude, and find it hard to see him being in the presidency, actually, because of that temperament. And they found her to be too much of an insider and certainly don't trust her. Do you think that, as so many people have said, he will rise to the occasion, and we all have a vision of what it means to be presidential, to conduct yourself in a statesmanlike manner, which I don't think many people, Republican or Democrat, would say that Donald Trump has been doing. So does he become a different kind of person, or do we accept the way that he campaigned to be a part of the presidency?
Well, we're going to see, obviously, now, right? Because, you know, he'll be the 45th president. Because you're right, the defining feature of the campaign against him from Hillary Clinton was that he was, you know, fundamentally unqualified and unfit to be president and commander in chief. So, you know, it's going to be difficult, I think, for a lot of her supporters and people who didn't want to see Donald Trump president to accept him in that role. And, you know, he's going to have to sort of demonstrate that he can move beyond sort of the things in the campaign that dogged him and were used against him. And at least I think we're sort of set up to do that. As was mentioned, you know, the speeches today from Secretary Clinton and President Obama sort of, you know, if nothing else, offering an olive branch, or at least saying to their supporters, look, you know, this is our peaceful transfer of power in our country and our democracy. You know, Donald Trump deserves the opportunity to govern. We should let him govern, you know, even if we're going to defend the values and principles that we obviously fought so hard for. So, you know, the ground has sort of been laid, I think, and Donald Trump even alluded to this in his election night speech, that he wants to be the president for everyone. Mm-hmm. And now it'll be up to him to sort of carry through on that. And, you know, maybe one of the things that has to happen is sort of avoid the temptations we saw play out on the campaign trail, where if somebody annoyed him or got under his skin or challenged him directly, you know, he always felt the need to respond, and that sort of got him in trouble and produced some of the moments that, you know, were used against him. And,
yeah,
you know, now that he's the president, you know, he's going to have to present a different demeanor, for sure.
Do you worry about his temperament? Do you worry about some of the language he has used, Ed?
No, you know, I would suggest that if you look at, say, someone like Barack Obama, or if you look at George W. Bush, 8 years, they're different people when they come into the office, and the office has a way, the weight of the office clearly impacts the heaviness of the responsibility. I think you saw a different demeanor last night. You also saw a much more disciplined Donald Trump in the last several weeks of the campaign, which served him well. And so I think that you're seeing that. Remember, you're talking about someone who has virtually before this last year and a half has no political experience, except as a businessman, no formal political experience, never ran for political office. So some of those niceties that we talk about are probably exactly a part of his appeal with some people. His straight-talking nature says it like he sees it. Now, Now, I hope he doesn't lose some of that, but I do think that there will be a natural experience and maturing process, as we saw with both President Obama and President Bush.
Let's take one call for both of you, and then Mark will be leaving us, and we'll have another guest joining us, and Ed will stay with us. Let's go to Carl in Beloit. Hi, Carl.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm looking at the big picture here in the demographics of the voters, and my view, my strong feeling is that I'd say the 30 to 60-ish white male crowd came out in droves, and over the past 8 years, under their breath, they may, I mean, everything, I'll blame it on Obama, but in a sense, I looked deeper and thought, maybe a person of color. And then for the Democrats to present a woman, you know, then you have a gender issue. And they, in my mind, said to themselves, I'll be darned if I'm going to go from a black president to a woman president. And they just, excuse the pun, trumped all the other voters, you know, population-wide. I believe white Caucasians are still the majority in that age group. And percentage-wise, as far as the voters go, and you look at the numbers from rural areas, and that's where Trump really made a lot of numbers.
Yeah, thank you. Interesting analysis. Mark, what do you think?
I think the caller's right on. If you look at the exit polling and how the vote broke down, you know, clearly Trump, you know, showed there was a big divide in rural versus urban. The caller's right. He got big numbers in rural communities across the country, including there in Wisconsin, and clear split in the demographics of voting, too. With I was just looking at the exit polls in Wisconsin. He won 59% of white men, 48% of white women, and 57% of those with a high school degree or less or some college. So, you know, while Hillary Clinton, you know, did better among the other demographic groups, you know, the more educated or the voters of color, certainly wasn't in the numbers that supported Trump. And, you know, there was always an underlying suspicion or question about how much enthusiasm there was for Hillary Clinton among sort of the core Democratic groups. She needed to have turnout in big numbers to support her, and I think some of that played out. But you also saw, you know, just, you know, much more enthusiasm and support among those demographic groups,
right,
that, you know, fundamentally, you know, underscore the divide we have in this country right now, and that will be up to, you know, Donald Trump to try and address if he, you know, really does seek to try and have a more unifying, you know, approach to governing.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark, very much. We'll be talking about this for a long time to come, so I hope you'll join us again.
Yes, definitely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mark Niquette, state and local government reporter for Bloomberg News. He's been following the campaign. Ed is staying with us, president of the Florida-based law firm Tripp Scott. He is a Trump supporter and happy about the results last night. Francesca Chambers will be joining us in just one moment, and we'll continue with your phone calls here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we invite now, she's been here before with us, Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent for the Daily Mail, who's been covering the Democrats in the 2016 presidential election. She is with us, and Ed will stay with us, and your phone calls will be a part of the conversation in the last few moments of our program. Francesca, hello. Thanks very much.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah. Thanks, Francesca. What happened to the Democrats?
I think that's what we're going to be trying to figure out here. I've been paying attention to how the White House is responding to this today, for instance, and they seem shocked, stunned, especially because Donald Trump seemingly won a lot of their supporters from 2008 and 2012, people that they thought would come out for Hillary Clinton and didn't. The things that Obama was saying and President Obama was saying and supporting her just weren't enough to carry Hillary Clinton over the line.
Mm-hmm. And the other campaigner who was really great on the stump speech was Michelle. She was probably the best of everybody.
She was fantastic. Most people have said that. The campaign the Clinton campaign was very happy with the work that she did. And President Obama was out there quite frequently as well. He spent almost every single day over the past week out in those swing states. He was in North Carolina for her repeatedly. He was in Florida for her very heavily. They even sent him to Michigan in sort of this last-minute dash to try and short votes for them. So they didn't really leave anything on the table, for instance, when it comes to President Obama. They couldn't have possibly used him more in the last week, really, when it comes down to it.
Yeah. All those who voted, obviously, there were different reasons. But the overwhelming reason that Donald Trump won, that he got more votes, is because of what? What do people expect he will do that will make their lives better? Francesca?
Well, I think that it does come down to the establishment versus a Washington outsider. The fact that the FBI scandal continued to be a cloud, her emails over her head, even going into the final days of that campaign, I think really did hurt her more than potentially the Clinton campaign anticipated that it would, especially since that she was again cleared 2 days before the voting started on Election Day. But I do think that was a big part of it is change. They were voting for change in Washington. A lot of workers were. They were voting for change in the economy. That's what I think at the end of the day this election was. It was a change election.
Mm-hmm. Ed, do you think she was a bad candidate for the Democrats to put up front?
I do think that when we reflect on what happened here, her candidacy may have been doomed before she ever even announced.
Because interesting.
The email scandal started before she announced her presidency, her candidacy. She announced about a month after that. So it may have been doomed from the start.
Yeah. What do you think, Ed? Ed?
Yeah, I think it's way too easy with respect to that. I think what you've got to look at is whether she was able to make a closing argument to essentially give her a true, clear rationale why she should be president. And I think Donald Trump's message was clear. It was, I'm going to be tough on illegal immigration. I'm going to build a wall. I'm going to cut taxes, cut regulation, be tough on ISIS, and that's what I'm going to do. And it was very clear as to what he wanted and what his messaging was. Whether that riled people up negatively or positively, it was pretty clear what he wanted to do. It wasn't so clear other than just continue the Obama legacy, which, you know, can be debated whether that's a good or bad thing. But that was the lack of clarity, I think, from the Clinton side that hurt her.
Mm-hmm. What do both of you think of the Electoral College? It would appear at this point that she will win the popular vote, though not by much, but not the Electoral College. Are the days past for the Electoral College, or is it still a good thing? Francesca?
I don't think that we're realistically going to come out of this election with Electoral College reform.
And probably not.
realistically, I don't think that's something that we're going to come out of this with. So regardless of whether you like the Electoral College or not, I don't think that's going to change.
What do you think, Ed?
No, I don't think it's going to change. And clearly, you can't look at this election and say, you know, but for the Electoral College, because the campaigns would be run differently. They would have different emphasis. You know, and it would impact the race if it was simply a popular vote. You would campaign in different places.
In states, yeah.
And so you would never have someone, like as an example, I mean, how many times would you get to go to visit Wisconsin? You would concentrate on New York, California, Illinois, and Florida, and Texas.
Right.
And so that becomes a very difficult thing. And one of your listeners need to think through that before we get too far down the road, although I would say it's really theoretical because it's never going to happen.
Well, on the other hand, Hillary Clinton failed to come to Wisconsin, and Donald Trump realized that it was important and came here quite a few times.
Yeah, that makes a difference.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton, I was going to say, Hillary Clinton, that's what it came down to. You asked what happened, and that is they relied really heavily on the Midwest to bring it home
for
them. And
yes.
Donald Trump ended up heavily winning white working class voters in the Midwest, and that's why he was able to take some of these states that would, in the past, have went Democrat.
Yeah, he sure did. Let's go to some phone calls. I'm sorry, Ed. Go ahead.
One other thing, I also think that Donald Trump truly, truly outworked Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton had the benefit of very good surrogates, Michelle and President Obama and her husband. But in the end, Donald Trump really outworked it. He was doing 5 or 6 events a day for an extended period of time. And mm-hmm. there were times during the campaign where Hillary Clinton, disappeared.
Let's go to some calls. Let's go to Penny in Sheboygan. Hi, Penny.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Well, I'm one who didn't vote because neither Trump or Clinton and that offered me anything uh-huh. new that I could use for a person in my position. I am on supplemental SSI, which is a government program.
Right.
I haven't been able to work, and for a long time, I'm at the mercy of food stamps, energy assistance, and all that. And they're talking about, and over the months, they've been talking about, getting rid of some of the entitlements.
Yeah, so you found that neither candidate spoke to all your many needs, and I'm sorry you have so many. Do we know what the final percentage was, Ed, Francesca? How many Americans did vote in this election? Was it low? Was it regular? Was it high?
I think it was high, at least in the handful of states I looked at. And so as an example, Florida had about 80% turnout, about 9.6 million people voted just in the state of Florida, which was a record here.
Wow. Francesca, what do you know nationally? Was it down?
Nationally, I think this is another thing that the Clinton campaign also took into consideration with the early voting. They miscalculated that because early voting was high, that and they were spending so much time
right.
on the early vote,
yeah.
that meant that those early voters were coming out for them.
Right.
And I think that when we look back on this, they will have really miscalculated that a lot of Donald Trump supporters were early voting as well
mm-hmm.
in those states that they thought they were going to win.
And what about this Latino vote? You would know about this in Florida as well, where Latino absentee voting was up something like 125%. Everybody mm-hmm. was saying this is a wave election. Was the Latino Hispanic vote way down on election day, or were a lot of those Hispanic voters for Trump? What was going on there?
Well, we got to remember that to look at Latino or Hispanic voters as one monolithic voting group would be wrong. In Florida, as an example, there are Cuban Americans who are predominantly Republican, and they came out in large majorities, about just shy of 60% in favor of Donald Trump. And then you have other Hispanics, such as like Puerto Ricans and others, non-Cuban Hispanics, which are mostly Democrat, and they overwhelmingly came out for Hillary Clinton. Overall, there was a huge surge in voter participation in the Latino side in Florida. However, the gap wasn't as was overstated because Cuban Americans kept the gap a little closer than people realized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's
but
go
at the same time
yeah.
nationally. I was just going to say that President Barack Obama won 71% of Latinos in 2012, and Hillary Clinton won 65% of Latinos this year. So even with her emphasis on the Latino vote and the things that Donald Trump said about Mexican immigrants, she still didn't meet President Barack Obama's numbers.
So she really was suffering from an enthusiasm gap here, too, that seems pretty significant.
And that on top of African-American vote totals
right.
were down this time compared to both the 4 years ago and 8 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
5% with African Americans from 2012.
Right.
And of course, the youth vote as well, 6% down from 2012 among 18 to 29 year olds.
Yeah. So, what does, in the minute that remains, Ed, what does Donald Trump have to do to bring this country together?
Look, I think you got to hear more of the tone of what you heard last night in his speech, and pick up on the opportunity that both Secretary Clinton and President Obama gave to try to begin the reconciliation process. I think we've got to stay focused on being a president and a leader for all Americans, and if he does that, I think I think he's going to surprise some people. I think he has the potential of really doing some things that will make a real difference in people's lives.
30 seconds, Francesca. What do you think?
I think that's right. He with what he said about yesterday evening and the olive branch that President Obama and Hillary Clinton are offering him. At the same time, one thing that he could not do that would probably be helpful is not spend his final days as a private citizen starting new lawsuits.
Right, or doing too many more tweets. He may want to, because that served him well to have that taken away for a while, don't you think? He was on message. Thank you both so much for being with us, Ed and Francesca.
Thank you so much.
Have a nice day.
Yeah, you too. Ed Pozzoli is president of the Florida-based law firm Tripp & Scott. He is a Trump supporter and was a member of the Bush-Cheney legal team in the 2000 presidential recount litigation. Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent for the Daily Mail, has been frequently a pundit on television covering this 2016 presidential race. Thanks very much to a number of people for helping out here. Thanks to KP Whaley and Scotty Myers and Zeb Gozman for production and on-air production and for working lots and lots of hours. Everybody's a little weary who's in the press today, to say nothing of the people who've been on the campaign trail. We continue our analysis of what happened yesterday with the Donald Trump victory. We'll have more guests join us, and you can join us as well after the news.